Hi, everybody. I'm Bailey.
I'm Drew.
I'm Lacey. And we're sarcastic, so let's get sinister.
You just like
Drew.
jump right in. That's great.
I mean, so to be honest, I've been up since like 3:45, so I would love to go to bed soon.
Oh, so you want to get this ball
Yeah,
rolling?
let's fucking bang it out. Bang
Oh,
it
can
out.
I just tell you real quick, quick little story regarding a crime scene? First of all, we had a fatal accident right around the corner from our house 2 days ago.
Oh no. Why'd you do
Yeah.
that?
I didn't, but I don't.
Sounds like something someone would say.
I was gonna say, impressed isn't the right word.
Was more.
Okay, so the street in question, there's the main street which kind of curves and then goes like this, and then there's the street that we always take every single day that comes in and then merges, and there's a stop sign right there. Apparently, this man didn't go around the curve and he went straight. And I assume he hit a tree.
Well,
And the
that's a
article
bold
said
move.
it was like 6 in the morning. He was pronounced on scene. And they said that he had heavy damage to his car or truck. And I was just like, what? How fast was he going? Because, like, how do you? I don't
It's
know.
not, you don't live in like a fast driving neighborhood.
Well, it wasn't in the neighborhood. It was like the area between my neighborhood and like the next neighborhood.
Okay, but what's the speed limit on that street? What's the speed limit on that street?
Oh, 35? I know because I always go too fast.
Okay, so like normal people go like 45, and then like jackass is probably like, I could do it 60, so.
I also think that he must not have been familiar with the area because, yeah.
Well, you don't even have to be familiar with the area to turn when the road turns.
Yeah, but if he was
It's
going that
hard.
fast,
Yeah.
he
Maybe he had a
wasn't.
medical emergency. Sometimes those
Yeah.
curves sneak up, Lacey. That's true. It's
Anyway,
happened.
the other thing that I was going to tell you is, so you know how like I enjoy watching Judge Judy?
Yes.
It's like that white noise. I explained to Lou the other day that, like, because we grew up in such a noisy household, I get unnerved when the house is quiet.
We grew up in a noisy household.
Yes. Are you being sarcastic?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Everybody in our house was talking very loud.
I could explain why I can't, like, I don't like silence. There are
Yeah.
four children in the house. I just assumed it was noisy without having lived there.
Yeah,
I
and we
had to
didn't.
sleep with the TV on.
Yeah, it was noisy. We lived in a small house for most of our lives. The TV was usually on. It was noisy. So, like, when the house is quiet, I'm uncomfortable. So, anyway, I often have some kind of YouTube video playing in the background just for something to listen to. But I've taken a break from Judge Judy, and I've been watching body cam footage just because I find it entertaining. And then also, like, there's a level, like, I gain a lot of respect for law enforcement watching that because they have so much patience. Like,
Yeah.
they'll be fight, like, drunk people will be fighting them. And then once they get them, like, settled, they're like, can you grab my shoe? And I'd be like, bitch, I'm not doing shit for you. You just kicked me. Like, can you move the hair out of my face? I'm like, I hope you choke on it. You spit in my face. You threw your cup at me, and I have like 10 more hours of this shift. Like, eat butt. Like, the fact that like the police officers and the body cams respond with like niceness, it's just, I don't know how they do it. I don't have the patience for that shit. But anyway, this one was these two law enforcement officers were holding the border. What is that called? There was a crime scene. They had it taped off, and they were just like standing guard. And it was in like the courtyard of an apartment complex. And this woman was like standing outside of her door in the kind of area where like there's stairs that go up, and she was just standing at the bottom of the stairs outside of her door. But there was tape straight across from like that way into the courtyard, and then tape on the her right. And then there were two like evidence markers on the ground to her right, within like 2 feet of her. And she was just standing there drinking a cup and like talking shit to the cop officers. And they were just like, "Don't go over the tape or we'll have to arrest you. This is a crime scene. You need to stay out." And so then she kept like sitting on the con like the ground with her butt outside, but her feet in the crime scene.
Like a little kid,
Yeah.
don't go over there, and they're like, I'm not touching it.
Yeah. And then like she's like messing with the tape and they're like telling her to knock it off. And then she spits into the courtyard. And they're like, "Listen, you are now introducing bodily fluid to the crime scene. You need to go back inside."
She did the crime.
Yeah.
I'm suspicious of her.
And then, so after she spit, they approached her and they were telling her this. And then she threw her cup at one of the cops while they were standing inside the crime scene area, and she was still outside. But she threw it into the. And if I was the detective, I'd be like, "Guys, what are you doing? You're compromised. Like, you need
Yeah.
to arrest her like
Take
8 minutes
her
ago." Like, I understand that you were trying to be like patient with her, but she's spit into it. She stepped into it, and now she's thrown a whole cup of whatever into it.
I feel like that's a chargeable thing, interfering with a crime scene.
Oh yeah, she was arrested.
So I don't know if it
Obstruction.
is, but it sounds
It they
like
charged her with
something.
obstruction because she obstructed justice by tampering with a crime scene.
I am suspicious of her because I feel like later they could be like, your DNA was found on our crime scene. She could be like, yeah, that's because I was spitting at it. I'm on body cam.
She was very drunk. And she asked them to ask her upstairs neighbors if they would watch her kitten. And the cop went up there and they were like, "Hey, we're arresting the girl downstairs." And the guy was like, "Oh yeah, she's crazy." He was like, "She wants to know if you'll watch her kitten." And his wife was like, "Oh, I hate cats. No, we're not doing that for her." I was like, "Okay. Stop bringing the kitten around."
I feel like they probably also don't have like a way to get in her apartment and do anything if they're not like
Yeah.
friendly with
I
her.
mean, the officer was also like, "She's not going to be gone for long. Like, she's not going to jail for months and months and months. She's just going to be bonded out eventually or whatever." I don't know. But yeah, I was just like watching that, getting mad. And it was a murder. They said multiple times that there was a man murdered.
Yeah, she did it.
But
Keep an eye on this case.
but after she was
Is that?
arrested, she was in the back of the squad car and she said, "I didn't do it." So
Weird thing to
she
say. I
either
didn't do
did
it.
it or she knows who did and tried to dirty up the crime scene.
I'm highly suspicious of this lady. We're gonna hear about her. Maybe we'll talk about her one day.
I don't know how
That can be Drew's case.
recent. Okay. But I think today we're talking with Bailey about something.
Yes. She's gone.
Oh, my God, where'd she go?
Oh, she's so sleepy. She did warn us.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Okay. We're talking about the serial killer known as Iceman.
Cool name.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's kind of a
Or
cool name.
Richard Krylinski.
Lots of a cool name.
Iceman. Yeah. He's Polish.
Well, clearly.
Okay, so we're gonna
Ooh,
start at the
lazy.
beginning.
What did you do?
I switched to a different tab and it was so bright.
And so
So bright.
blue.
So, Stanley
Let me do this.
Krylinski and Anna McNally were
Are there,
Polish and
sorry,
Irish.
are there pictures?
No.
Oh, okay.
Google it.
Okay, great.
So, Stanley Krylinski and Anna McNally were Polish and Irish. They settled in Jersey City, New Jersey. In 1933, they welcomed their first child, a son named Florian. In 1935, they welcomed their second child, their second son, Richard, who will be the focal point of this episode. In 1942, they had a third and a daughter named Roberta. And in 1944, they had their final child, Joseph. So the home was not the typical idyllic 1950s family. Stanley, the father, was verbally and physically abusive to Anna and the four kids. He beat them regularly, and the beatings would get worse when he would drink. And he was an alcoholic, so it's pretty frequent. In 1940, he beat his first son, Florian, to death.
Oh.
Yeah, and Florian was only like 7 years old.
Oh.
He wasn't a great guy. He would leave and return the fa to the family frequently until he finally officially left, well, left forever, in 1942 after Roberta was born. I don't know how they made their fourth son, but when Stanley was gone,
Maybe
Anna
he was a
was
goodbye present.
Anna was the sole parent. She was of Irish descent, and she had been raised as an orphan in a children's home. She was raised in a strict Catholic environment where discipline and routine was prioritized over love and affection, and that's how she raised her kids. That
Lacey,
sounds right.
take notes.
Yeah, you were
Yes.
saying that you're concerned with parenting
Yeah,
advice
losing
being
my
out the window
TikTok
with
parenting
TikTok.
advice. Yes.
Follow Anna.
A lack of love and affection.
Yes.
Don't let it spoil
Routine
them.
is above all, Lacey.
Yeah.
She was stubborn, cold, and unaffectionate. Take notes. For discipline, she used verbal abuse and violence.
Oh, there you go, Lacey.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So
I
you've
like
got like
having
a mix of things.
all these things to try out.
Yeah.
Yeah, options. It's important to have options because sometimes like one punishment can get kind of stale. So it's good to have something in your back pocket to whip out.
Yeah.
And also, like, if the kids just keep on like going against that same punishment, you want to make sure that you have like tiers of like start with the verbal abuse and then increase.
And then if you need to kill one of them, that probably will get the rest of them in line for at least a little while.
Yeah, I imagine.
As a child, Richard did not make friends easily. Because of his small size, he was bullied by his peers. There was a group of boys that regularly bullied him. In 1949, at the age of 14, the taunting and bullying finally caused him to snap. So he removed the metal bar from a closet at home. He waited for the leader of the bullies, a kid named Charlie Lane, to make his usual appearance. And before Charlie could utter his first taunt, Richard started beating him with the pole. Once Charlie was dead, he cut off his fingers with a hatchet and pulled his teeth with pliers. Richard then went after the rest of the boys and beat them all nearly to death.
Oh.
I feel like that escalated very quickly.
Deeply. It was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was kind of like on Team Richard in the beginning, where I was like, yeah, stand up for yourself. But then you said he beat him to death, and I was like, oh, that's a bit of an escalation. And then
Yeah. And
it got to
then
like
there was more.
mutilation, and then he went after the other kids. Yeah, he might there
Yeah.
can I make a guess?
Sure.
There might be something wrong with him
Oh. Do you think it's because
psychologically.
he watched his dad kill his older brother?
Maybe well, no,
Like.
because remember that is a good form of punishment.
Oh,
Keep
okay.
him in line.
You're
It
right.
might have been just, you know, did he play violent video games? Because
It was the
I've heard that
40s.
that violent video games. Did he listen to rap music?
It was the 40s.
So probably.
I don't think rap was out then. You're right. He was so into like Tupac and Eminem and Biggie.
Yep, that was the cause.
Richard also tortured and killed neighborhood cats and stray dogs. And after eighth grade, he dropped out of school.
Oh, good.
At that point, he began odd jobs and criminal undertakings. He frequented a pool hall and became very good. He then became a pool shark to make money. He started doing jobs for local gangs. He would steal and sell goods for them. He became quite efficient at burglary, stealing things from jewelry to cars.
Good. It sounds like he's got a good variety of skills.
Yeah, he's really excelling.
Well-rounded.
Eventually, he grew to be 6 foot 5 inches,
Oh, wow.
weighing almost 300 pounds,
Hefty.
causing him to be feared by many because of his height and his short fuse, which, if that hadn't already been clear.
Oh, he has a short fuse?
Yeah, I know, you don't see it coming.
Well, I mean, he took the bullying for a while, it seemed. Don't
Yeah.
maybe he was maybe that's what caused the shortening of the fuse. He was just like, well, that's not gonna happen anymore.
In 1953, at the age of 18, he became an associate. Hold on. He became associated with the members of a mob family, the Cavalcante.
Ooh.
They hired him on a few occasions to carry out some car thefts and other robberies for them. He was very successful and was used regularly. He also became indebted in debt in debt in
Indebted.
yes to mobster Roy DiMeo. It's a lot of Italian names I'm gonna butcher. Sorry, my people.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you're
I know.
embarrassing me.
When Roy sent men to beat him up for money, for money that he owed, Richard stayed stoic and impressed the guys, and they brought him on as an associate after that because he took his beating so well.
Feel like that's best case scenario if the
Yeah, you
mob comes
know,
after you.
mob stuff. In 1954, he began to travel to New York City, prowling the Upper West Side for victims. He
I
would
don't
pick tar
love that you
prowling.
said prowling.
Sorry.
That's okay. It's just, it's like, it's an icky.
Yeah, he's kind of an icky guy.
I picked this picture specifically because
It's
of how
creepy.
creepy he looks.
Yeah. He would pick targets based on people that simply annoyed him. If someone he felt slighted him in a small way, he would go after them. And he really enjoyed killing random people.
Good.
Yeah. He had a lot of let's call it creativity
Oh,
with
good.
his killing methods. He would shoot, stab, strangle, poison, bludgeon, according to his mood.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, his weapon of choice shifted constantly, and this prevented police from suspecting one person. He used everything from ice picks to bare knuckles to hand grenades.
Sorry.
His poison of choice was cyanide, and he once made a nasal spray bottle filled with it, which
He is pretty
feels like a
good.
spy thing.
Yeah. He must have been watching James Bond movies. That's why he's so violent. The violence in the movies.
Well, it was also in the 50s, so like World War II and like the
Yeah.
Red Scare.
Maybe.
Sorry, my cat was looking really cute.
Okay.
Hi, baby. She's sleeping. Anyway, he continued to carry out assignments for the mob as well, for DiMeo and the Gambinos. His two rules, though, supposedly, was no women and no children.
Oh, we're safe.
Yeah. Just to show how vicious and like kind of like dickhead as she was. I have a quick little clip I'll play for you guys.
It was a man who was begging and pleading and praying, I guess. He was pleased God and all over the place. So I told him he could have a half hour to pray to God. And if God could come down and change the circumstances, he'd have that time. But God never showed up. And he never changed the circumstances. And that was that.
I don't know what to say.
It seemed like he liked to toy with his victims.
I think that it sounds like he enjoyed having the power, which is probably because when he was younger, he felt powerless in his life. I'm armchair diagnosing him.
To avoid detection, besides switching up his motive, he removed fingers and teeth. He melted bodies in oil drums or left them in the back of junkyard cars to be crushed. He also enjoyed using the Hudson River or old mine shafts. Police at one point thought it was just homeless people attacking and killing each other. They never imagined it was like one person doing all of this.
Just a bunch of homeless people attacking each other.
Yeah.
And having teeth and... Yeah. They're wily.
So, in 1958, he was arrested for stolen goods in Jersey City. I think he got out shortly after. At that point, he decided to get a legitimate job for a while until the heat cooled off. So, in 1960, at 25, he was hired at the Swift Line Trucking Company, where he met a beautiful Italian-American woman working in reception.
What was her name?
She was 19 years old, and her name was Barbara.
Lovely Italian name.
They quickly started dating. The following year, on September 8th, 1961, Barbara and Richard got married. At that point, he was like already in like the double digits, supposedly, of who he's killed. And Barbara had no idea.
Well, it's good.
It's important to have separate interests in America.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, personal hobbies.
Yes.
And, you know, it adds to the mystery, you know, of love and whatnot.
After they got married, he decided a regular job wasn't for him.
What?
But he kind of missed the crime. But at the same time, he knew he needed a normal sounding job to be with Barbara, for something to tell people that he did and something for Barbara to like believe. So he started working in a film lab from a family member of Barbara's. He would start bootlegging movies from that lab.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's also like, I enjoy the variety of crimes that he's committing.
He's got a wide range.
Yeah.
In 1962.
Just in addition to like the variety of modes of murder. Like stabbing, shooting, all the stuff. Just he's willing to do anything. Car thieving, bootlegging, just, you know, whatever. He sounds like a good guy. I like him.
Okay. In 1962, he adored his wife and wanted to give her whatever she desired. So they moved out to the suburbs and decided to start a family. This became his top priority. And in 1964, they welcomed their first child, a daughter. The following year, in April, they welcomed their second child, another daughter. At this point, Richard was still working at the film lab, started bootlegging films and selling them for extra cash. These were mostly like family flicks and comedies at this time. He did notice that porn happened to make more in sales and decided to go forward with that. He approached some members of the Gambino family who agreed to loan him money. However, he didn't line up buyers for the material, so he started falling behind on the payments for the Gambinos. He failed to meet the repayment deadlines and failed to sell the porn and received a beating by the enforcers. This caused him to go back to selling the family and comedy flicks. In January 1969, they welcomed their third and final child, their first son. The family lived in an affluent area. The kids attended an expensive private school, and they hosted barbecues in their backyard. They took trips to Disney, and Richard was even an usher every Sunday mass. So, and again, his family had no idea he was like doing this. Just to give a little more insight to his like childhood family. In 1969 as well, his little brother Joseph was arrested and charged for the rape and murder of a minor and was incarcerated in Trenton State Prison. Yeah. Family of winners so far. Yeah.
Well, their upbringing was just really
Yeah.
good.
To keep the separation in his life, Richard didn't tell any of his associates anything about his personal life, meaning his family or where he lived. He stayed away from drugs and prostitutes and never really bought what the mob was selling. So he was like, he stayed an associate. He wasn't like part of the life, really. In 1971, Bruno Latini was assassinated in a mob-style hit in New York City. Richard claimed that Bruno owed him money and he killed him. He shot him close range in a car park in the early hours of the morning. Money was, you'll see that the money is super important to Richard. He always robbed his victims. And we're gonna get into some of the, well, the more the murders we know more information about because they ended up leading to his capture. The first one was George Maliband. On February 1st, 1980, he was murdered by Richard. George was working with Richard, it seemed like, and they were having a disagreement over the money. He was last seen at the Holiday Inn in Bergen, New Jersey, checking out before noon. Around 1 p.m., he made a call from Richard's office confirming that he was with Richard, and they drove together to see Roy DiMeo over the money that George owed Roy. On the way back from the meeting, there was a disagreement between George and Richard. George demanded the money Richard owed him. When he refused, George said he had to help him get the money another way. Richard said that he replied, "What if I don't?" And George said, "I know where you live, Rich." George, sorry, Richard promptly stopped to the car, pulled a gun, and shot George. He was shot in the chest numerous times and was killed instantly. Richard then stole the cash on George. It was rumored to have 25 to 75,000.
He just had that on him?
I guess.
Okay. Oh.
Richard then stuffed him into a barrel. But George was a large man, and stuffing him into a barrel was hard. So Richard cut the tendons of his legs and arms so he could manipulate him into the barrel better.
Don't like that.
Yeah. And then he dumped the barrel over the edge of a cliff near a chemical plant in Jersey.
Jesus.
The body was found 3 days later by an employee at the plant when he noticed a leg sticking out of the barrel. At that point, on the in February, they well later in February, the police took Richard's statement because they knew that he was with George. But nothing had come up, nothing would come up that for a while. Also in the 1980s, he started his own crime ring with a man named Percy House, Gary Smith, and Daniel Deppner, where they did cons together and burglarized.
I like that he just started his own crime ring.
Yeah, you know,
He didn't want to
he's
be
showing
limited.
ambition.
Yeah. He didn't want to be limited to somebody else's crime ideas.
Crime ideas. Oh, fair, fair.
So in March 1981, this is when the early investigations into Rich began. It was headed by Lieutenant Pat Kane of the New Jersey State Police. And he started investigating a string of thefts and burglaries where he found Rich was the common link between at least 40 burglaries and 20 auto thefts. Rich's next con was to Louis Mezgay. So Louis and Rich met for a purchase and sale of stolen goods. Louis supposedly left his home one day. With almost 100K in cash for these stolen goods, to which he used all of his savings and a back loan of 45,000 to make up the amount for Rich, for which he asked for. So they met up. They were kind of trading small talk and waiting for Rich's guy with the merch to arrive. While they were waiting, Rich began questioning where the money was and wondering about, like, if he brought the exact amount and making sure he had enough. Lewis insisted that it was good. He had the appropriate amount. And they waited longer. Lewis eventually began to get pretty anxious with the wait. Rich calmed his nerves, said it was okay, but again was questioning the money. At that point, Lewis brought him to his car or his van, and showed him the secret compartment where the money was stashed. Once Rich saw the money, he shot Lewis in the back of the head. He then stole the money and wrapped Lewis in garbage bags, about 15 to 20 layers to be exact.
A
Once the
lot
body
of
was.
bags.
Yeah. It's got to be thick. Once the body was wrapped, he hid the body in a large freezer in a garage he rented for almost 2 years. Eventually, when he was found, the ME found ice crystals in the body tissues, which determined that he was frozen, earning him the name Iceman. So, like, after like 2 years or whatever, Rich took his body out and dumped him somewhere. And that's where how he was found.
Fun.
In 1982, he conned another guy named Paul Hoffman. Paul was a pharmacist and was tricked into thinking that he was buying prescription drugs, which it looks like he was buying Tegament, which, from what I could see, was an antacid. I don't know why he's buying it, but. He was going to buy it from Rich. He planned on selling them over the counter for a higher price. So Rich spent a lot of time conning Paul. What he would do is he would say, like, oh, Paul, like, I got a guy for like the hookup. Like, make sure it's like this much. We'll meet up, whatever. But then he would say, oh, my guy got nervous. I'll find you a new one. And then each time he did that, he would jack up the price. So Rich was just finding a way to elevate the price to get more money from Paul. When the time came, they finally met April 19th, 1982. Rich claimed that his guy was coming, but was nervous again if Paul had the appropriate amount of money. Paul showed Rich that he was good for the money and the drugs. At that point, Rich then pulled his gun out and placed it under Paul's chin and pulled the trigger. Paul fell to the floor, gagging and grasping his throat, but wasn't dead yet. Rich tried to shoot him again, but the gun jammed. So he found a tire iron and beat Paul over the head repeatedly until he was deceased.
Sure.
He then stuffed his body in a barrel and dumped the barrel outside of a store called Harry's Corner Luncheonette. Which is an interesting name, but...
I like it.
Going back to the investigation at this point, Lieutenant Pat Kane was able at this point to file indictments against the gang. He also was connecting Rich with the disappearances of Louis and George when he conned them. He was granted indictments against all the gang members, charges totaling 153 counts. The first man to be brought in was Percy House, who co-ran the gang with Rich. He was arrested December 17th, 1982. And he told them everything for a plea deal.
What a rat.
Yeah. He gave them all the names for the other gang members. Again, it was Gary Smith, Daniel Deppner, and Richard. So, knowing this, the heat's on. The three men started hiding out in motels under false names. And Rich was beginning to get paranoid. So how it would work occasionally is Rich would go out, grab these men food, and then they would go back to the motel and, like, eat together or whatever. Being paranoid, Rich decided that it was time that he needed to close ranks and cut some loose ends. So on December 23rd, 1982, Rich went out for burgers for the men. On the way back, he snuck cyanide into one of the burgers. When Gary Smith bit into his burger, he started reacting to the cyanide, but it took longer than expected. Which, if anyone doesn't know, cyanide, it's a fast-acting deadly chemical. It affects the body's ability to use oxygen. In its deadliest form, it's when it's like a gas and you breathe it in. Ingestion can take, like, will also kill you, but it takes a little while. Not happy with the amount of time it's taking for him to die, Rich ordered Daniel Deppner to finish the job. So Daniel grabbed a lamp and used the cord to strangle Gary.
Like, can you imagine if you thought you were just, like, having lunch with... If it was just us three, and then, like, you... Bailey went out and brought us home burgers, and then Lacey started choking, and you were just like, finish her. Lacey, you're muted, babe.
Why do you think I would kill Lacey?
It was a hypothetical. No. There was three of us, like the three men in the story.
She wanted to sacrifice herself.
Chose you. I could switch it up. Lacey, how would you feel if I came home with burgers and Bailey started choking and then I said to you, finish her?
I don't know why you think I could kill Bailey.
She's nearly dying.
She's scrappy.
Thank you.
It seems like a weird to the unsuspecting third.
Yeah.
To just be like, okay.
It's also, I think Daniel knew about it, but there's a detail I didn't include in my notes, but I think I can, like, recite it. When Richard ordered the burgers, he ordered two with pickles and one without, and the one without, he put the cyanide in, so.
I thought you were going to say when he ordered them, he ordered one with cyanide and the other two without. I was like, that might have been a bit of a getaway.
Can you imagine the mob making a fast food restaurant like that?
Oh, so nice. Very convenient.
It'd also be really hard to cover your tracks. Because receipts.
Yeah.
So, were you wondering what happened to Gary's body after they killed him?
Yes.
Okay.
Can
Do
I
you have
take
any
a
guesses?
guess?
Sure.
They put it somewhere that was not very hidden.
Yeah, you're correct. Lacey, do you have any other guesses?
No, I think Drew's got it pretty well.
Okay.
Thanks.
Ready?
Yeah.
They stuffed him in the box frame of the motel bed.
Oh my God. That was not where I was thinking.
Okay. But you got
Okay.
it, because 4 days later, Gary's body was discovered by people staying in the room when they noticed a foul-smelling odor coming from the bed.
Ew.
I don't
Yeah.
even know how to respond to
Okay.
that. I don't know what to say. It just seems like a I don't know what to say.
Okay. So, of the gang men, we have one dead.
Gangman.
We have one in custody who's blabbing Oliver. And then we have Daniel
Singing.
Debner's and Rich still.
He's
And, they're
singing
going
like
to
a
be the best of
canary.
friends. Except, unfortunately, Daniel's time was coming to an end, too.
Yeah, I would be very nervous.
Yeah. In February 1983, Rich decided it was time to take him out too.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Where's his family? He's like
Whose?
hang Rich. He's like hanging out in hotels and shit, but he's got like a
So,
whole ass family.
yeah, I don't know if he said like he was gonna be away on business, or it made it seem like with what I was like reading, he was going back and forth. So I think he was like putting up Daniel and Gary in motel rooms, and he would go back and forth to his family. Not
Gotcha.
sure. Unfortunately, a lot of the information we have is from Rich,
Oh, so it's
who's,
take it
I
with
mean,
it.
some of it's truthful, but like it's also just it's hard to pinpoint everything and get
Gotcha.
all the details. So Rich poisoned and strangled Daniel too. I don't have a lot of information on this murder. His body was wrapped in layers of plastic bags, and then he took his body to be stored. He stored his body for a little bit and then dumped it. And he dumped it along Clinton Road in West Milford, New Jersey, which I'm pretty sure I did an episode on.
Yeah, isn't that the
It's like the haunted road in
Yeah.
Jersey. Yeah. Which is actually how I found the Iceman or Rich. Daniel's body was discovered by a cyclist along the road in May of that year. So the investigation's still going. They're noticing these bodies pile up. So they decide that they need to get Rich. So in
Sorry.
1985,
I thought when you said the investigation's still going, I was like, currently? They haven't finished it
they figured nothing out.
yet? Moving real slow.
They're really taking all the time to gather all the information they
Yeah.
can.
They don't
We're
want to reach
actually
to conclusions.
helping them right now.
Think we're helping everybody.
So in 1985, they developed an undercover operation, which is fun.
I'm in how? What did they do?
So they placed an undercover cop close with Rich to establish a relationship, but also like to purchase guns. They also wanted to purchase cyanide from him or get him to purchase the cyanide, and they also wanted to eventually get him to agree to be hired for a hit. So they wanted to get him on like weapons, poisoning, and also murder.
He like murders his friends though, so I would be really nervous if I was going to go undercover to be his friend.
I think that's like an occupational hazard, though. When undercover.
Oh, I see. Okay. I thought you meant like it's an occupational hazard to be his friend. You're going to get murdered.
Well, I mean, could you really trust your fellow organized crime people? The undercover operation went well. They did like get evidence on him, like purchasing and selling guns. Next, they were going for like the cyanide and the hit. They were successful in getting him to buy cyanide from them, but it was fake. However, Rich would end up finding out it wasn't real, because he tested it on a duck.
Oh,
Oh.
Rich.
Of all the
So,
things.
Barbara and Richard liked to take walks together, and they would walk in the park and feed the ducks. So when Rich had this portion of cyanide, he tested it and fed it to a duck. Nothing happened to the duck because it wasn't real, but that kind of got Rich suspicious.
Yeah. Also, like, but okay. Is he testing all his cyanide out on ducks?
I think it was because this is like a newer guy. He wanted the keep. He was paranoid and wanted to like double check.
Okay.
I don't know.
I don't want him testing out.
At this point, Rich kind of started to catch on, so the police knew that they had to act fast. So in December, they arrested him, which shocked his wife, his family, and his friends. He was arrested on 5 counts of first-degree murder, 6 weapons violations, attempted slash conspiracy to murder, robbery, and attempted robbery. On March 25th, 1988, he was convicted for 4 of the murders. He was found guilty for the murders of Smith and Deppner. He pled guilty to the murders of George and Louis, and then also confessed to the murder of Paul Hoffman, the pharmacist, but the charges were dropped, apparently. Which, if you can, I mean, I guess they don't, I mean, he doesn't need to get any more time because he was ordered consecutive life sentences at Trenton State too. So he got reunited with his brother.
Oh, darling.
Yeah. Once in custody, Rich completely opened up and loved to talk, which is why we know so much about him and how much he killed and all the different methods. He allegedly has victims in this 3 digits, like number range. He participated in 2 documentaries about his life and spoke candidly about what he did and why. He gave interviews to prosecutors, psychiatrists, reporters, criminologists, and newscasters.
So he was pulling an Ed Kemper.
Yeah, but I get the feeling that he probably really liked the attention, and I don't think Ed did. I think Ed was just like,
I thought Ed liked the way the sound of his own voice. Like that's why he.
I think Ed did, but I think Rich liked the like notoriety of it.
Oh, like he probably gave himself the nickname the Iceman. Like that kind, like
Yeah.
BTK style.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Well, I mean, he did. He agreed to do 2 fucking documentaries of his life. You really need two?
It's a long life.
He had
So
a lot
many
to cover.
things. Yeah. He's lived that many lives.
In 2001, Rich confessed to the murder of Officer Peter Calabaro. So what happened was March 14th, 1980. Peter Calabro, that's his name, was on his way home after a shift. It had been snowing bad the past few days, and it was around 2 a.m. when he turned onto not his street, but the street like leading to his street, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
The road was long and surrounded by a lot of trees on both sides. He came upon a van, partially blocking the road. So Peter slowed down to go around when a large bang and flash of light went off. His body was found the next morning, still in his car. He died of 2 fatal shotgun wounds to his head. So back in 2001, Rich confessed that he was ordered to do this by the Gambino family's underboss, Sammy the Bull. Rich was convicted of this murder in 2003, and it was added to his sentences. In 2005, he was diagnosed with an incurable inflammation of the blood vessels.
Ooh.
When he got much sicker, he was transferred to a hospital where Barbara saw him one last time and signed a DNR. March 5th, 2006, he died in prison of natural causes.
Oh
Richard Kalinsky has a 37-year-long criminal career, starting from when he was in his young teens, ending by an undercover operation led by ATF and the FBI. And that is the Iceman. Yes.
So, like, I'm sorry, but to go back to close to the beginning, did anything come of him beating a child to death?
No.
Boys will be boys, I guess.
That was
I
probably
guess.
the gist.
Yeah, so.
I had never even heard of him, and he killed so many people.
Yeah, and it was also like kind of like an our state neighbor, so.
Yeah.
He had his fingers in a lot of different pots. Like, he did his own thing. He went to New York, had his own fun, like murdering people. He was like associated with a lot of different families. Which I saw a comment that like even like the fam like some of the like mob families were scared or put off with like how
He
good and how
was.
like he didn't care. Yeah.
I mean, I would be put off. But
Yeah.
that's me. We are approaching our 2-year anniversary.
So
That's a little
exciting.
crazy.
A little
Should we do
Also,
something special for our
hold on.
anniversary? Probably.
Go birds.
Oh,
Go
yeah, well,
birds.
I mean, obviously, go birds.
Also, special shout out, even though he doesn't listen. We're recording this on my husband's birthday.
Haps bees.
Happy birthday.
Yeah. You can still follow us on TikTok for now. We're also on Instagram.
Patreon.
Yeah. Follow our Patreon. You get to look at our beautiful faces. You get to see our funny Christmas video. And yeah. So that was sinister.
And we were sarcastic.
And we hope you keep listening.